Now, a Talk Radio 1210 WPHT special presentation.
It's the end of the world.
Hey, Neuro, let's put a trigger warning on trigger warnings.
I gotta take it on the other side.
Yes, welcome into another Other Side with Dan and Dorenzo. Dan Borowski here from the Dom Giordano program, 1210 WPHD. Anthony Dorenzo from everything else here, 1210 WPHD. Kale and Company, Dawn Show. Anthony, how you doing today, sir?
Oh, man, primary day reactions. It's great. It's a good day. Good day. Pennsylvania's at the center of the world once again. So
got a lot to react to, including earlier today, Anthony. I don't know if you were listening to the Dom Show, but we got a call from Gary, who's very familiar with the unions, and he was trying to essentially say to Dom, being a old white conservative, were his words, that he is there's no chance for conservatives in the future because the young generation, young people, new Republicans, new Americans have absolutely no desire to follow their rule of life, their idea of life. And Anthony, that kind of set the stage for what I want to talk about with you today, and what our guest is going to join us to talk about as well. And that's what does conservatism look like in 2024, 2030, moving forward into the future for the young generation? How do we capture young Republican voters? Anthony, horrible turnout numbers in Philadelphia again with Republicans, and just a general sense of can this be done? Do you think there is a place for conservatives in the future?
If they wake up, I mean, do they want to keep losing? Like, they need to look in the mirror. This party is at a point where they need to pivot. And I think even someone like Trump kind of knows that. It's demoralizing as a young person, as the Republicans kind of just wave the white flag and let young people be attracted to Democrats. But yeah, I mean, they need to start having the tough questions. Like this morning when we were on with Kale and Company, Greg consistently said, if you're a Trump supporter and these numbers don't concern you, why don't they? Because this is, I mean, especially in a primary, it's something that is indicative of, if people aren't excited right now, how excited will they be in November? And to me, this, I think people on both sides, whether it's Biden or Trump, if you're, you know, center right, center left, you know, moderate, you usually vote. I think even a lot of those people might not even vote this time. But I will say, still a decent turnout for Pennsylvania yesterday. And the protest vote very much gets me energized with 144,000 votes for Nikki Haley, over 60,000 votes for Dean Phillips. Those are huge numbers to me. And that proves to me the whole third party thing and putting pressure on the establishment to acknowledge new voter bases. That's very much encouraging.
Well, I'd push back and say my point of there is a future for conservatism is because in a bipartisan culture, I don't think there's ever going to be any place for anything but a left and a right, essentially. But there's a person here that's going to join us now, Rebecca Terrell. She's the senior editor at The New American, who writes an entire magazine and edits an entire magazine that's dedicated to looking at other kind of ways of conservative issues. And she had a great piece that really looks at the excommunication of Biden based on his political stances. Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, back on Easter, Biden did the Trans Visibility Day, essentially called him out and said that this guy's politics, his morals, don't lay well with Catholics. And we have here Rebecca, who's deemed by the FBI, what is it, a radical Catholic because you play the organ, right?
I do. I am. I'm on many lists. I've been in the John Birch Society for 40 years. I'm a traditional Catholic. So, yeah, I'm on the FBI most wanted.
And it's a great piece you have here about the Catholicism issue. And one of the big things we talk about here on Other Side a lot in capturing a younger voter base and a younger generation is the topic of abortion. And as a Catholic myself, I think Anthony's a Catholic. My first question to you is, before we'll get the mission of the magazine and all, but before anything else, is there a avenue here for conservatives, religious conservatives, to capture a young voter base who seems generally moving to the left, the Overton window shifting to the left a little bit here on the topic of abortion? Is there a place for conservatives to still capture voters using a pro-life stance?
Not as long as they're compromising. The GOP is never going to win with the young voters unless they take a very strong, seemingly in this environment, radical stance of saying, no, life is sacred. God created it and it's sacred, and it doesn't matter how it's created. It doesn't matter if it even involves rape or incest. That's not the child's fault. abortion is murder, abortion is infanticide. And I'm talking about elective abortion. The term abortion in medical terms is a very umbrella term that can involve natural, you know, miscarriage and things like that. We are talking strictly about elective abortion. And, you know, a lot of people, you can't have an intelligent debate about this because, you know, they're talking about how, oh, they're restricting women from getting necessary health care to save their lives. There is no Planned Parenthood clinic in this world that will service a woman who's having a miscarriage. They will send her to the hospital because the hospital is what takes care of miscarriages. Planned Parenthood takes care of murdering infants, unwanted infants, elective abortion. If a woman's life is in peril, there is absolutely no OB-GYN in this entire country who would refuse her service. And I'll tell you why. Even if they didn't care about their patients, which they do, they care about their careers, they care about their licenses, because they could be sued for malpractice if they didn't. So the whole, I mean, all of this, it's outright lies that you're hearing in the media about this, oh, these women can't get necessary care because of the abortion restrictions. It's lies, absolute unequivocal lies.
Yeah. And to me, like, this issue is so complex, and I do understand it's hard to even talk to anyone about it, to your point, because we all get into these platitudes, and then someone brings up, oh, well,
dude, it's hard for me to talk to Maisie about it. I don't know if it's hard for you to talk to Mary about it.
It is. Yeah. It's hard for me to talk to my own girlfriend about it. Genuinely, it is, because and I'm not trying to say she needs to listen to me. Like, I don't need someone to tell me I'm right all the time. But my point is, like, Roe v. Wade in general was flawed, because federal law shouldn't be deciding those things. And state law gives the power to the people. But people don't understand. The Democrats let this sit in place for 70 years because they knew the Republicans would eventually do this.
There's a very simple solution. And the Supreme Court has absolutely pulled the rug out from under us by not declaring that unborn children are persons under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, subject to, you know, eligible to receive all the rights and privileges of personhood. And that would end the debate. And they didn't do that. They didn't take the opportunity to do that. Now, the other side of that argument is, okay, in Dobbs, which they passed a couple of years ago, Dobbs didn't directly address that question. So that was, you know, outside of the scope of that one case. But again, you know, it's something that should be addressed. We look down our noses at cultures like, for instance, the child sacrifice of the Incas so many centuries ago. Abortion, elective abortion, is child sacrifice. It is satanic sacrifice. And that's why I say, you know, if the GOP or the Democrats, for that matter, want to appeal to young people, they're going to have to be radical in that way, standing up not for this tolerance of everyone's opinions, but standing up for the rights of God and acknowledging that God created this earth. The earth is the Lord's, the fullness thereof. We answer to him, not to tolerance of other people's cultures and beliefs. And it doesn't work. They don't have tolerance of us.
But in the immediate nature, let me ask, because my wife is she's a girl that went to Catholic school growing up. She has very conservative ideals, but she's a one-issue voter. She's openly admitted that she is so emotionally driven by the abortion vote. And her response to you would be, in the immediate factor, she's concerned that her life is in jeopardy here. And, you know, if she were to have a situation where it became you know, either a choice between her life or the child's life, she wants to be able to make that decision herself rather than have, you know, a government official make that decision. How do conservatives break through that emotionality to say that that's not the truth here? How do you make a point to the voter, to the young woman voter, that this is not what's happening here, and there is a future for morality in pro-life?
Right. Absolutely. And I would say absolutely that the federal government has no business dictating any of our health care. They shouldn't be involved in our health care at all. However, I'll say, too, I do have nursing. I don't practice anymore. I have an inactive license, but I am a nurse. And I will tell you that OB-GYNs are unique doctors. They have two patients. They have the mother and the baby. And their goal is the health and the safety of both. When one is imperiled, the goal of any intervention or treatment is to protect the safety and health of both But when one, like, look, let's take, for instance, a very common occurrence, ectopic pregnancy, where the egg, the fertilized egg implants outside of the uterus. That is always life-threatening to the mother. It will never result in a live baby. The baby cannot develop in that sense. That is a case where any OB-GYN is going to go in and prevent that ectopic pregnancy from rupturing and from causing sepsis and causing the mother to die too. Okay. Now, what you get into a situation where you have these RU486 and all these chemical abortions that are being mail ordered to women without any doctor's supervision at all, there's a very high incidence of ectopic pregnancy in women. It's alarming how high it is. And when these women are taking these chemical abortion pills, the effects of them can precisely mimic an ectopic pregnancy with pain and blood loss and things like that. And women can be putting themselves in peril of their lives by exercising their freedoms and taking these chemical abortion pills when they actually have an ectopic pregnancy and they're going to die if they don't get medical intervention very quickly. So, I mean, what the Biden administration is doing by pushing these mail order chemical abortions is much more imperiling women than any elective abortion restrictions, which, again, you have to remember, elective abortion has nothing to do with care under an OB-GYN of a pregnant mother.
Yeah.
And going off that, I was just going to say, because I'm very much, I feel like a lot of people don't understand what principles are anymore in government and also the role of government in your life. And this issue, like, to me, I grew up being progressive, to be honest. Like, I feel like, I mean, I got shipped to the March for Life and I went to Catholic school. And to be honest with you, that kind of made me think the other way, because it was honestly, it was a little scary. I don't really love people telling me what to think in general, even from a young age. And I think I naturally went the other way, like a lot of people do. Eventually, I mean, especially right now, as someone who's like older, you know, I'm not old, but I'm approaching 30 here. And if I had a kid right now, I wouldn't want it aborted. It would haunt me a bit. But I think the biggest issue to me is the party picks and chooses when they're about freedom. And like you said before, I don't think the government should be involved at all. But then at the same time, it is murder. So like, where is, like, finding that fine line? And I know this is such a hard issue to like mitigate and compromise, but like, I think the party kind of needs to acknowledge that, even as hard as it is. And but like, how do you even do that?
You know what, again, it goes back to state the truth, because these days you don't hear the truth. I will say, there's an old saying that says, when the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world, right? And that was indicating the mothers, right? Yeah. Well, the mothers left the cradle. The mothers have turned the cradle over to the state, and the mothers have, they're equal with men now. Well, what we women have done is we have come down from our very high elevated status of ruling the world by rocking that cradle. We have demoted ourselves into this man's world because we want to be independent. Well, look what we're doing. We are sacrificing our culture. We are seeing, watching our culture, the complete demise of our culture, because these people are coming in over the southern border. We have China invading. We have all these countries, all this stuff that's aiming directly at our young people, the trans agenda, aiming at the people who are supposed to be the parents of the next generation. We have the opioid epidemic. What is that? What demographic is that decimating? The people who are supposed to be the parents of the next generation.
Let me stop you here, because I think the New American touches upon all these topics fantastically. And I want to talk about the magazine a little bit and the issues that you guys hit the most. What's a common trend that you guys write about often, and something that a candidate could embrace and talk about more than they're currently talking about on the campaign trail? I see you write a lot about Rand Paul and his work with coronavirus and you know, a lot about freedom and all. What is something that you think candidates should embrace and kind of talk more about?
I think that, well, I actually, many moons ago, I worked for Rand Paul's father, Ron Paul, when he was in Congress in Capitol Hill. I actually authored his bill to get us out of the United Nations, the American Sovereignty Restoration Act, which has been introduced in every Congress for nearly 30 years. So I think that what we need more of is people acknowledging that there is an international cabal that's pushing us toward world government. A few years ago, you'd talk about that and woo, you're a kooky, you know, conspiratorial theorist.
New World Order. Oh, yeah.
Right. New World Order and all of that. And now after COVID, people are going, whoa. Wait a minute, maybe they were right. Well, we are right. And the thing is, we have the receipts. We have the documents.
Who's Geppetto? That's a question I can't answer because I'm with you 100%. But who is it that's pulling the strings? Is it Klaus and friends? Like Bill Gates? Who's doing it?
Right, exactly. Well, and it has been actually, I mean, when you go right back to it, it really is a demonic conspiracy because it's been going on for years and years and years. I mean, we've had... From the Lincoln administration. I mean, and forget about the Civil War. Forget about all of that. Look at the Lincoln administration. He turned our federal government on its head. He made the states subservient to the federal government. And it's been on and on. The Grover Cleveland administration implementing the Interstate Commerce Commission, subjecting all of our country's agriculture and commerce to the federal government. And then on it, move forward to that, we had the attempted League of Nations, which was a failure because our Senate wisely kept us out of that. But then after World War II, we had the United Nations come in, and now everything is subject. We actually, in the United Nations Participation Act of 1945, our Congress handed unilateral authority to our president to subjugate the entire United States to the decisions of the UN Security Council, the five members of the UN Security Council. Now, people say that's not conspiracy. Well, okay, you could say it is out in the open, but nobody's paying attention because the media is not reporting it. So that's why we call it conspiracy, because it's being done behind the scenes, even though you can easily find it. And we bring the receipts at the New American.
Any thoughts as to what coronavirus was? Was this an instrumentation? Because I think a lot of what Rand Paul's fight is almost a continuation of what you and his father did here in trying to expose this globalist cabal. And I think coronavirus is a thread that we can pull to untie a lot of the secrets.
Yeah, and I see everything that they've done is the attack on health through coronavirus and all sorts of the taking over of the healthcare industry in the United States by the federal government. It's all aimed toward depopulation. You know, what the litany that I was starting to run through before, the trans agenda, that's depopulation. The opioid epidemic, that's depopulation. Flooding our country with illegals who come into our country waving the flags of their countries that are supposedly so horrible, they have to get away from them to come to freedom, but they're not bringing what we need to realize, and we need to stop using the language of the left. And a trigger word for me is the West. Well, they've renamed Christendom the West. So it takes that religious aspect out of it. They are focused on killing our culture, and our culture is Christian. Our culture acknowledges that God, the triune God, made the world, and he gets to dictate what happens. And you start giving away, oh, we need to be tolerant of this person and tolerant of this culture and tolerant of this belief because they don't agree with us. They're not going to exercise that same tolerance for us. We have to choose. Are we going to choose? Which army are we going to choose? Because we are at an existential moment. And you say, okay, you want to cater to the young people. And I don't claim to be young anymore, but I remember it wasn't that long ago that I was. You have to give young people something to die for, something to live for, and something that's actually worth dying for. That was part of the problem that with the greatest generation, you know, who Tom Brokaw named the greatest generation, who came back from World War II, and their philosophy was, anything but war. Yep. Anything but war. Look, the other side of that coin is my country's not worth dying for. That is the wrong attitude. And young people want something to live for and something that's actually worth dying, worth fighting for and dying for. And you get that in your equation, you're going to win with young voters.
I wholeheartedly.
Sorry, I just want to stop. Before you go, Anthony, I just want to put up Sid's comment there because your future is a communist government. I think you would endorse that if we keep going down this path. I think that's where we end up.
Well, I always say we're already a monarchy. Like, we're back to where we were. Like, get the tea out. Let's pour it into, you know, the Ben Franklin Parkway, dude. Like, it's time. Like, it is. Like, they look at what they just did. They finally passed the Ukraine-Israel aid bill, $95 billion in debt. That goes to our great-grandkids. And this goes to a war that 75% of Americans don't care about, don't want. We also helped fund and give weapons to Hamas and all of them. So all angles, we help them. And we continue to make all of this even worse and worse. And to what you just said, in a sense of, you know, you're not tolerant of this community, you're not tolerant of that community. Why did our ancestors come to America? We wanted a place where we could all be Americans and not be X community, Y community. All of our cities had neighborhoods. Okay. They came from different cultures, but everyone kind of came together and understood trying to be Americans. And that I think is something we've all lost. And to honestly, to your point, I think a big part of modern warfare and drones and kind of taking the people out of it more and more and more, I think that has kind of led us to this point because, yeah, why would you have to die for your country? And honestly, at the same time, I love our people. I love our country, but I hate our government. I wouldn't want to put my life on the line right now for these idiots. Like, not just for Lockheed Martin, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you also have to, we also have to remember we're not very good students of history. And throughout history in Christendom, there are time and time and time again where a very small Christian army would go to war against the Muslim invaders or, you know, this or that other foreign invaders who are trying to take the Goths and the Attila the Hun and this and that. And it was through sacrifice. It was through a very adherence to God, prayerful adherence to God, that those Christian armies routed forces much greater than themselves. And we need to look back at that history and realize we've been lied to. We've been, if we've victims of public school and victims of the mass media that has been leading us down all these psyops and rabbit holes that are just flat lies.
Yeah. Hey, so Rebecca, thank you so much for your time. You've really spent more than we could ask for, and everything's been amazing. Like, that's why I could keep going. And I just have one more question. I don't know if you can answer this quickly, but I pointed to Klaus and I pointed to Bill Gates, but one big elephant in the room we haven't addressed yet is China. And I'm just curious, is the end game here for China to be the world leader when it comes to, you know, West versus East? What's the deal there?
Well, you know, we look back at, let me take Sodom and Gomorrah as an example. You know, if God doesn't punish us, America, for our crimes, then he owes Sodom and Gomorrah a big apology because we're so much worse than anybody else. And I see that China might be, you know, his hand of justice falling on us. And what do you do in that situation? Well, we have the biblical lesson, you know, from time and time and time again, historically and cyclically, people fall into debauchery, which that's the state we are now. God punishes them by sending something like, in our case, I see China as that, you know, corrective hand of God. And we do penance through the sackcloth and ashes thing. And he has mercy and hears our prayer and restores our land. It says that in the Bible, I will hear their prayer and restore their land. So take a lesson before it's too late.
And the final thing, what are you working on with New American and where can we find you?
Yeah, right now we're at newamerican.com and we are the publishing arm of the John Birch Society. So that's jbs.org. And right now we're working on a series of videos teaching about the UN and how it is an international cabal pushing us toward the new world order and one world government. And that sounds crazy conspiracy. It's not.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely have you back on to explore that. Yeah, right.
That's right.
well, thank you again, Rebecca. Have a great, great night, and I appreciate you joining.
Thank you so much. Good to see
y'all. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Fantastic, Anthony. What a guest.
Yeah, she was great. Awesome stuff.
And so fascinating to hear the entire, you know, NWO world cabal almost summarized intelligently by someone of her stature. It's, you know, she helped Ron Paul draft the withdrawal from the UN. It's fantastic to hear her. Thank you for setting that up.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, no, I've been talking to JBS for a bit, and it's been, all of their guests have been great. So happy to have her on. We'll definitely, we'll get more stuff from them also. But before we totally move on from abortion, I need to vent a little bit. And I was going to with her, but that stuff at the end was so much more interesting. So in that case, of course, my favorite, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is mentioned in none other than the Washington Post, of course.
Yep.
And because he won't conform to the one issue mentality of the national election with abortion, They are kind of bashing him. So RFK Jr. rarely mentions abortion and sends mixed signals when he does. For many Americans, November's presidential election is about one issue, abortion. President Biden hopes that a pro-abortion rights message will carry him to re-election, and Donald Trump regularly brags about his role in ending Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court decision that protected abortion rights. RFK is the long-shot independent hopeful with a famous family name whose candidacy has been heavily relevant on his skepticism of vaccines, and he barely mentions abortion.
So this is Washington Post you're reading from?
Yep.
I just love the framing of the story is centered around how important of an issue abortion is. What was that first line that you pointed out?
For many Americans, November's presidential election is about one issue, abortion, period. That's crazy. I mean, I know we touched on that, and I understand that's a real thing.
I don't know. I don't know if I disagree, though. I think for many, it is one issue.
I mean, it's a true statement, but it's manipulative because this is how they want us to continue to think over one issue. Why do you think I like RFK? And I don't hate Trump. I mean, I'll say I probably hate Biden at this point, but I get frustrated with the babidi babo and the status quo of politics and how they never say anything. They go up there, they put out their message, they listen to their PR person, et cetera, and we get the same thing. You know, they're the victim, they're pointing the finger. RFK is the first presidential candidate, I think, in my life that is at least talking about the issues, whether
besides
it's
abortion.
Exactly. And that's why do you think he's not talking about abortion? Because he understands that that shouldn't be a federal issue. It shouldn't be. And the fact that we're trying to focus this national election around abortion and get people emotional, whether they're religious and against it or they're pro it and they're younger or, you know, whatever, just Democrat, pro-choice, that is just wrong to try to focus people there. And Sid actually said earlier in the chat, we have more dumb voters than informed voters. And honestly, I hate to say it, but it kind of seems like that's the case. I hope people are waking up. I mentioned the polls earlier, 144,000 unsatisfied Pennsylvanians alone voting for Nikki Haley when she's already out of the race. So this gives me some hope. And I mean, even Democrats for 60,000 or more votes against Biden in a state like PA, that's pretty solid. So like, these are the things that give me some hope. But at the same time, people can't just walk into that poll and think whatever guy they saw on a stage made them feel better is going to help us all. Like that is, as an American, you have a responsibility to your country. Like you have a civic duty. And I remember I used to brush it off as a kid, but we really do. Like our country needs to be about freedom first and foremost and about one people. And if we keep going down this path, we're not going to. And abortion's one of those issues that helps.
How do you avoid it, though? And they continue to make, like, I love the sense of the idea. I mean, it's a different perspective than what I would present, but what she had that, you know, we stress how immoral the issue is and try to change hearts and minds. But, you know, the truth is it's going to take a lot to do that. And as it currently stands, Democrats have done an entire generation's worth of work as to turning this into an emotional issue. So is it possible to just clap your hands and things go away?
Well, I would say not if they continue to operate in the way that they operate. Look at how much money Joe Biden spent in Pennsylvania compared to Donald Trump. I forget the number that Biden had. It was in the millions. Trump had 700,000, I think, in ad sales in PA, which is nuts. That's nuts to me. I get it. You're the presumptive candidate, et cetera. But especially with you being in court right now, not getting out ahead of this, when you know the blueprint since 2020 has been this abortion thing for the left. And it works every time. The new Gavin Newsom ad works. It all works. They all hit the nerve. They do it. Even as stupid as it is, it works. But I will say, Trump just went on 6ABC, and we have the clip here.
Well, here's this first, the Gavin Newsom ad.
Oh, yeah. Go right.
I love this. We got to make fun of this, man. The acting.
We're almost there. You're going to make it.
Trump Republicans want a criminal.
Point out something. You obviously aren't familiar with cops if you think they're still driving Ford Crown Vicks in the year 2024.
At least give me a charger. Come on. Yeah,
right.
What are you doing here?
Trump Republicans want to criminalize young Alabama women who travel for reproductive care.
Miss, I'm going to need you to step out of the vehicle, take a pregnancy test.
Stop them by taking action at righttotravel.stop.
I just got to replay the dramatic look towards the camera.
Take a pregnancy test.
Stop them by taking action at righttotravel.org.
It works, though. It works.
It does.
So many people are going to see that ad and recognize the emotional implications of the things that are being proposed by Republicans.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And that, I think my point is, I know I'm veering off a little bit with, and we'll go to the Trump thing next, but my point is, if the Republicans continue to let the Democrats frame them with abortion and a plethora of these topics, then they're going to keep winning. They will. Like, you need a cohesive message on abortion that continues to give people their freedom and talk about big government. I mean, almost pull a Bernie. Talk about the evil system of big government.
Do you think that would play? Like I love hearing what she had to say about, you know, the cabal that's globalist and all. And I think it's so damn obvious because we're in this world of politics, seeing it on a daily basis. But does that play with the casual average voter? Or does it still come off as crazy to a, you know, person who's not completely plugged into the news and recognizing that the coronavirus was proof of a, you know, international conspiracy?
I'm conflicted on that just because I think a lot of people are hyper political now because of COVID and what it did to people and how they understand that politics impacts their lives. And I think that's kind of part of what I'm taking from some of the polling positivity I've had today. But I think regardless, the party, if it really is impossible to toe the line, but if they don't put out money and campaigns to do the opposite and say, we're not against abortion, we're against big government making any decision for you and your family, be about free, emphasize those things. And again, you know, once you get into 15 weeks, whatever, that's a whole nother debate. But I think IVF, which Trump even says here, is something they could lean into. But let's listen to this and we'll react.
On the abortion thing, and it's a very simple.
Hold on. Did you watch a Trey Parker and Matt Stone deepfake video with the release with Al Gore a while back? And this kind of warning about deepfake and AI videos. It looks remarkably like this video. Are we sure that 6ABC actually interviewed the real Donald Trump?
It was in the middle of one of his court appearances. He went and did this and went right back into court. So
it's a very weird hunched over look with a really, really false looking background.
Situation that has now been worked out. For 52 years, they've been trying to get it back to the states. I was able to get it back to the states. Now all of the states are making their decision. Pennsylvania is making its decision. They're all making their decision. And this is what people have wanted. It's taken the complexity out of it. It's very simple. It's now states. The people are voting, and they're voting all over the country. Sometimes it's conservative. Sometimes it's not conservative. But the abortion issue is has been really largely taken off the table, because when we did this, we did what both sides, everybody wanted, legal scholars wanted, everybody. They wanted to take abortion out of the federal system and put it into the states. And we were able to do that when we terminated Roe v. Wade. Now, when you look at it and you look at what's happening all over.
Hold on, are his dentures not connected on the bottom?
No, you can't say that. We need Zioli to get another interview.
But no, seriously, like, watch them float. They float.
It's been really largely taken off the table, because when we did this, we did.
Is it that or is it lip?
Everybody wanted legal scholars wanted everybody.
It's a loose venture.
They wanted to take abortion out of the federal system and put it into the states. And we were able to do that when we terminated Roe v. Wade.
They're going to pop out like Nancy Pelosi.
When you look at it and you look at what's happening all over the country now, states are voting. Ohio just voted. All different, by the way. It's tailor-made, and it's really working out well for people.
I don't know, though. He just keeps going and going. He's like an Energizer bunny every time he's asked about the issue. Can he just make it more concise?
He needs to. Yeah, he's never concise. He's always long-winded.
Like, it's dancing. And I feel like when Maisie sees that, she's like, well, he's dancing around the issue. Just answer the damn question.
Well, he does double down on the IVF and women thing at the end, if you do want to hear that. That's probably the best part.
I'm still so distracted by the denture. I'm
very, very happy. Every legal scholar felt for a long time. For 53 years, they've been trying to do it. It was wrong being in the federal government. Now it's in the states. Your state's going to vote. They're all going to vote. And it's really taken it largely out of play. And in terms of the IVF, fertilization, we are totally for that because it helps women. We're looking to help women.
Totally for fertilizing women.
You know, they tried to pin that on us, and actually they were the ones causing problems. We are totally for IVF, the fertilization, and we are going to really run on it and run on it. Very
just don't
hard.
Word it that way, Trump. You're so close. Like we're. I'm in favor of the fertilization of women. It's just it's not a good phrase, I don't feel.
Yeah, I think, but this is, you're right. They're not concise whatsoever. And even with an answer like that. So I get it. I understand both you and I know like Roe v. Wade was bad and it wasn't good law and local level politics and local level decisions are better. Like everyone knows that, but you can't do like if he wants to win these moderates or even some Democrats, you can't keep bragging about Roe v. Wade. Like, I get it. You want to say like the scholars have your back.
But I think that's kind of, is that not a, I hate to use the left phrase, but a dog whistle to evangelical Christians?
It is. It's essentially a dog whistle. And shout out to Sid. I'll take a pregnancy test before a DUI test. I'll be negative. Yeah, probably same here. So.
And he's obviously drunk right now because he says, the what show? Your logo is backwards. Sid, you watch every single one of our episodes. You're probably our most dedicated watcher. And you're just noticing for the first time that our logo is backwards.
Oh,
it's a play on the Red Hot Chili Peppers album, if you're unaware.
Yeah, and the other side of the glass in radio, so a little bit of a double entendre. But you know, my point is with this, it's they really do need to figure it out. And the state to state thing, I agree with him, and I think women will eventually understand that. But there are states where women still don't have the right to do it, and I think that's what they get. Like those are the things I can't get past when I'm in an argument about it, and I say, hey, well, about freedom. Create a grassroots movement. Create a grassroots movement and build a coalition to then have abortion legal, which in the Northeast for us, it's pretty easy. But sometimes in the South, that's hard. So, that's the conundrum because a lot of women, even if they can vote, they feel kind of powerless because they're used to the big daddy of government. And people, like we always say, like, what was that yesterday? Dom's question when someone called in and said, what's something that people say they want, but they don't really want or say they like, but they don't really
what's something
like?
That people say that they like, but nobody actually likes.
And freedom to me is that, dude. We're at this point of where we take freedom so much for granted because we're 200 years removed from the longest struggles of our country. And now we want a leader. We want an overlord, and that's the problem, dude.
Younger generation is like, you know, it's looking to the government. I guess
there's not going
to
be a messiah. There's not.
Yeah,
we're the messiah. All of us.
Well, I guess if you look at student loan issue, it's the messiah is the government there, right?
Which they created the problem, which shouldn't even be allowed. Like, no kid should be able to have that money and take out that loan at that age.
And that's another thing, I think. Like, we can dig into that real quick. Another issue that I think would sell well with young potential conservatives or Republican voters, and that's student loans. Like, why are we not embracing the reality of the issue and essentially pointing out that it's the Democrats that caused this?
Well, that's something I try to consistently say. The Republicans are totally complicit in this. They are 1,000%. They just sit there and approve it and act like it's good still. And look at what they've let happen to college campuses today with what's happening at Columbia. And they let us, our government funds this BS. It's absolutely insane, and it continues to go up. And we approve these universities for unlimited funds, for unlimited students, as long as they have the right GPA.
Yeah. Hey, just humor me real quick. I pulled up the deep fake that Trey Parker and Matt Stone from South Park did of Al Gore and Donald Trump. And tell me it doesn't look like what we just watched from 6ABC.
Of Washington, so concerned about deep fakes.
Well, what has people in the government really scared is that deepfakes can put words in people's mouths. You know, make people say things like vagina and poop. And then you've got senators going around saying vagina poop. But they didn't say vagina poop.
But you're saying deepfakes are already out there.
Yes, deepfakes are everywhere. I'm serial. I brought along a video. I want you to watch this video. What you're about to see is not really Tom Cruise.
You can watch it forever. Someone took the computer and they
made him say and do things he wouldn't say. Now watch. And remember, this is not Tom Cruise.
Hi, I'm Tom Cruise. It's me, Tom.
All right, we've had him. Go watch that.
They predicted
Sassy
the future.
Justice with Freddie Blassie.
They predicted the future in like every single sense. I think more than The Simpsons. But regardless, I just also want to touch on, before we totally move on from some national and local stuff, I wanted to touch base on McCormick and Casey as that rolled out in the primary. Both of them unopposed, unfortunately. I always want an opponent to keep people honest. But either way, Casey with 100% of the vote and 1,653,000 total. McCormick with 100% of the vote, 873,543. Yeah, so McCormick, actually, when I was at an event last week with some of our listeners, shout out to Hope for PA and Republicans for Hope. They are, you know, grassroots movement here doing some events.
You had a speaking arrangement, huh?
Yeah.
You were the headline act after Dave McCormick? Is that what happened? Right, he opened for you?
Yeah, Dave opened for me, exactly, which I did not realize. But either way, it was cool getting to know everyone. But when I was with Dave at this event, he expanded on the importance of mail-in voting, similar to like how you and Dom have really zoned in on that with Scott Pressler, as he has hired one of the top mail-in executives from Florida who has had success in the past with DeSantis. So they're really zoning in on that. David.
Oh, that's awesome.
So Florida, they're getting some insight from Florida and how they've made it work. To be honest with you, a lot of Republican voters were unhappy with him being so embracing of mail-in voting. But at the same time, look in the mirror, guys. Do you guys want to win? Like, you need to play by these rules and embrace mail-in voting. If not just embrace, push it.
Like, it's possible to play by the rule and fight against it at the same time.
Exactly. And also get into nursing homes. Find ways to get more ballots there. Maybe even have an election day. Maybe like elect something like this. We'll propose it with a community. Talk about getting more voting initiatives for Republicans that aren't active. Like, there's ways to do this without you guys just complaining that they cheat. And both sides can easily do that. Our system is flawed. We need to continually try to hold it to a high standard and push forward for better at all times. So I think you can, like you said, you can fight against it and find a way to make it more logical while also finding ways to mobilize. And there's no way, if you think the Republicans are so perfect at mobilizing voters right now, you're out of your mind. You're straight up out of your mind. And
I think there's definitely market improvement though. You know, it looks like Scott Pressler's at least giving some behind the scenes advice to the RNC, and what he's doing is great. I mean, creative. I think he said there's a Puerto Rican population in Northeast Pennsylvania he's trying to go after. There's the Amish population. There's just very creative tactics that are being employed by the Republicans. But as we can see here, is it going to be enough? You're still 130 votes, 130,000 votes behind here.
And
again, we're talking a primary, but still, it's reflective of how many people are actually going to come out to the polls in November.
And to compound off of that, when it comes to the presidential stats, Trump in Pennsylvania, out of all Republicans in the primary, 83.39%, 790,000 votes and 102. Biden with 93.14%, 931,000 votes, 348. So will Trump really mobilize that many more voters? This almost proves to me the RFK factor kills Trump in a state like Pennsylvania or Michigan.
Really?
It looks like Trump's base, that's probably, I would say, 75% of his base voted for him heavy there. And then the other 10% were probably moderates between like an RFK and a Trump. And that, to me, on top of the Haley voters, on top of the Dean Benson voters. Those are alarming.
So where do you stand then? If, like, personally, does RFK need to get the hell out of the race if it's going to affect Donald Trump?
I just love RFK so much that even if he does lose, like even when we had Rand Paul at our event at Politics and Pints, he essentially said he's not going to just blindly endorse Trump. He wants Trump to address some of his mistakes and own up to things and realize things with COVID were a problem on top of a few other concerns. But his stance on multiple things and realizing that RFK continues to shed light on topics and talk about them the way that not many politicians have really, maybe ever. Rand Paul acknowledged that.
Would Trump get any, you know, ground if he were to employ some of RFK's? Like, if Trump started talking about a globalist cabal that's trying to poison us all, Is that going to have play with the media that's instantly going to try to undress him as being some kind of conspiracy theorist?
I mean, to be fair, look at how much success Kennedy's having on the other hand with a similar idea with how he's going after big pharma. And on top of that, giant food corporations that poison our food. Like, it's not really like he just frames it maybe in a little bit of a better, you know, vocabulary, but it really is like the same idea. It is like it sounds a little more crazy when you bring up the cabal. You know what I'm saying? And that's, I think this proves that Trump, you know, I get it. RFK doesn't want to be his VP, but I think he should try to pick someone almost of the mindset of an RFK, where maybe a woman too. I know that's kind of a hard thing to find, but generally Robert F. Kennedy Jr. should be a part of whatever the future is with free thinking Americans. And I think today that's the Republicans, and they should embrace that. And I mean, Rand Paul, when he said that at our event, I was shocked.
I think if there's one party of the two that's for free thinking Americans, like you often hear the look at the Donald Trump fans and conservatives following the cult. But why does no one ever point out the cult that's the left, that if you step aside or step out of it, you are lambasted or canceled social situations? It's very clear to me which party is the party of free thinkers. And I've always been a very independent person myself. Lean left on some, lean on right on others, but I find myself leaning towards the right because of that, because I'm sick and tired of the control that we have on comedy and on speech that we see in media, that people are afraid to actually speak their mind because they aren't in line with a progressive ideology. It's something that we've seen turn dangerous now. Let's bring it local. A story that you've said and behind the scenes, and story I said, like you often with trans stories, I'll put it out there. I think you think that conservatives make a lot out of nothing with the trans issue just to kind of make an emotional issue. And I think a lot of conservatives kind of see through it that way too. But behind the scenes, you were like, I go, what do you think about this attack at Pembroke Middle School? You know, a potential trans student here that, you know, students warned about as being violent, that school administrators kind of turned a blind eye to. And the allegations, the rumors are maybe it's because that student was trans and they didn't want to face the political implications of. And you said, you know, that's a story that needs to be covered, that needs to be heard. And I ask you why is that a story in your mind that you think needs to be out there?
Because accountability is the thing we all need to hold sacred. I think that's what we're all forgetting with how political our world is today. And I don't care if that's a boy. I don't care if that's a girl. I don't care who it is. No matter who it is, if they threaten another student and say they're going to violently attack them with like a 5-pound water bottle on top of smacking their head onto a lunch table, and someone is told, a teacher, an adult is told, and they shrug it off because they don't want to live in reality, and they'll just say, hey, you'll be fine. That to me, this is the perfect opportunity to look at how this issue should be framed. I think you're 18 years old. Again, this party, I'm about principles. You're 18 years old. You want to get gender surgery. Nobody should really question it. Like, that's a very hard decision. I think it's a hard thing to deal with in general. We can't just demonize these people. Some of those people are conservatives, and you know, they're just going through a hard personal thing. And that, to me, an issue like this, it shows the political implications of what happens when we really do show all these kids bureaucracy before they should see it. And now teachers and administrators accept it. But at the same time, a father spoke out at this. I know we've played it plenty of times on the air since it aired. But he essentially says, I have no issues against any community. But what if this was your daughter? What if this was your relative? You know, there's accountability, and what's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong. And that's exactly what we're dealing with here. And I want conservatives to get out of their own way and stop complaining about pronouns and seeming like ignorant, as when they're just talking to adults who want to be, you know, regarded in some certain way. I understand it can be confusing, but if someone tells them me to call them a certain name or et cetera, I'll do it because I don't really care. Like, I'll say what you want me to say. Like, I'm not going to sit here and fight you and turn this into drama. Like, I want to respect everyone and give them the chance, you know, to get to know me the same way I want to get to know them. And that's, again, I think we have to be about freedom. And a story like this really, I think it sheds a light on how politics really impacts this narrative as a whole.
But why? Like, yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And I like the idea of accountability, underlining that word. And I just, we're not allowed to talk about, like, why are we not allowed to report that this student identified as trans. I mean, I don't think that itself has much to do with the story, but the fact that this was potentially thrown aside by administrators for the reason that the student identified as transgender, I think needs to be taken a second look at, because yep. Like you said, I think it is a much bigger story than what is just here locally, is because we never allow a conversation to persist when it comes to mm-hmm. accountability in multiple facets of life right now, where we're talking the criminal justice system and holding people accountable, or we're talking school shootings and holding people accountable. It goes all different ways. Why, as a society, can we not just have a heart-to-heart discussion on topics like transgenderism or, gun rights or crime, and not let the political, the PC kind of terms get in the way, or I don't know.
This is just the problem with national politics, because the trans thing has infected every school system with these debates and fights between parents, administrators, which honestly, at the end of the day, I'm happy more people locally are engaged. No matter why that's happening, I'm happy that they're engaged. But this is what we should do. We should go and have honest conversations with each other, even if we disagree. And this is the perfect example of finding accountability. It doesn't matter if they're trans or not. It does not matter. I think, in my opinion, I don't think any kid under 16, 17, 18, without a parent consent, you shouldn't be able to really take this, in my opinion. And I think this all plays into the medical system and them trying to get money any which way they really can. It's not cheap to get these surgeries. I just think in general, this is the perfect way to deal with the issue, because it needs to be a local issue where people logically talk about it. You know, it's one thing if adults go to a drag show, but why is there a third grade class that has a secret drag show that they didn't tell their parents? And I get it. That's not happening everywhere, but it's been happening at some times. And this, to me, this shows the importance of local government to bring this all together. We talked about the primary. This shows the importance of local government and local just grassroots movements. This is, you need to be able to have an impact on your community and also impact a narrative instead of, like you said, accountability. With the last 10 national issues we went through, it's not there because they don't want us to think logically. They want us fighting. They want the power structure to be upheld and have a top-down system. And then we let them win. With the trans issue, I get it if you don't agree with me, Tiny Bubbles, whoever it is, but it doesn't matter if you agree with me. If you fall for their emotional game, you'll lose every time. You will. And we need to deal in logic. And we need to stop acting like we're two teams. We're one team. We are one team. I'm convinced we could convince most of these people.
I don't know.
They're Americans.
With the purple hair, though. How do I expect to end up on the same team as them when they have such different morals?
Well, those people are emotional and illogical. And, until they realize they need to start using context clues and brain.
I think a lot of the Pembroke issue is too. It's also like I hate to say I told you so to those purple hair types, where it's like, if you let this issue spiral out of control, if you silence other people from talking about the issue honestly, then it's going to lead to violent issues like this, where people are concerned about political repercussion if they do take action when warned by a student that there might be something aggressive here.
Yeah.
So
I mean it's scary in general, and I really, really wish all of the kids and families in that school district well, because it's hard to deal with.
What's he talking about here?
Chocolate ants. I don't know.
So maybe it's about during the Dom show, during Dan time, I mentioned that there's a lot of it's a new trend for people in the world of food reviews and such to try cicadas as it leads to them. The cicada, yeah. And there's an actual long review here. Sorry, I guess we're going to make a detour into this. Let's say I'm not such a bad cook. I want to read what it was. Best description of what a cicada tastes like: a nutty mixture of soft shell crab and boiled peanuts with a texture that's much more soft shell crab. If soft shell crabs were the size of boiled peanuts, it's so good. Like soft shell crabs, they fairly or if pop with flavor in your mouth, revealing all sorts of complex flavors. And I'm here to report none of those flavors are at all buggy or gross. Very good with risotto, apparently.
Weird. Weird.
So just a little detour. Any thoughts on trying that one, Anthony? Yeah.
I don't know. I think, is this part of the globalist ideal to get us eating insects and reliant on bigger systems?
Climate change. And
yep.
So that's kind of where I'm going with it. So a tiny bubble says aggression is resolved. The hormone blockers, I put that up there, be a secret, then says there's no E in the middle of hormone, babe.
Well, I said, I don't think anyone, like, especially without parental consent, like under the age of, like, you know, I said 16 just because kids are allowed to get like a job and tattoos at 16. So 16, 17, 18 with parental consent, I guess. But I don't think many kids should be thrown that. That's an adult decision.
Gary is the guy actually called in the Dom Show today, say that there's no future for conservatism with the younger generation. Most normal people don't want a biblical lifestyle or some version of Handmaid's Tale. I don't think that's really what she was, you know, implying there, do you?
I don't totally think that. I think she's just saying we've lost all of our morals because of religion. And politics has become the religion. I think that she didn't say that, but I say that a lot. And I kind of think that's a part of the issue. And like what I was just saying, we all think we're fighting against the enemy when in reality, we're all one people, and the enemy are the people at the top, and they like each other way more than you think. So I think that's just the number one thing is we have to unite. That's the number one underlying.
Well, I think to push through everything is, you know, what she was kind of talking about. And when it comes to Catholicism and Christianity, was that's really the basis for what we know as Western civilization.
Yeah.
And when you think of, you know, what people want when push comes to shove is, I don't know, you know, unless you identify as someone who's gay or trans, it's the idea of a, you know, wife or husband, kids, house in the suburbs or the city, an affordable life where you can live comfortably, you know, happiness more so than sadness and seeing family, all this kind of stuff. And I think that's what almost every American strives for. So I think the end goal is the same. And that's kind of what she was referencing is Western culture that's underlined by the Christian morals that we have as a nation.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I don't fully align with her, but I for sure appreciate that perspective. It's something you really don't hear a lot at all. So I shout out to her for really kind of peeling back the onion with that.
Gary says his religion is science.
You can't look at our government's corrupt and they work with scientists and big pharma all the time. And that's not perfect. Look, they allow us to eat Oreos and drink great Gatorade with all these chemicals and pollute our own systems and eat this fast food.
Like utopia, I would say my religion would probably be science too. But then you have the pharmaceutical companies who want to lie out their asses to try to make money. You have Dr. Fauci who's facing questions about what happened in China. So what science is my like
Obama banned gain of function research. So this isn't a right wing conspiracy. Obama banned gain of function research because he thought this was weird and threatening, and Dr. Fauci went around him, and they all play mad scientist as much as, you know, like gain of function research is a real thing. Look into it. Like, we're not crazy for saying that. We need to question things. Oh, capitalism and science. Okay, that's crony capitalism and science because the government picks winners and losers. That's what's happening. These aren't like little pharmaceutical companies that like, oh, a startup like me and Dan, we're going to sell cheap insulin. We're going to start selling cheap insulin. You can't because the government needs to give you your little stockpile to be able to do it and give you all the approvals with their red tape. So no, that is not capitalism. We are in a state of crony capitalism. Government exists to limit monopolies. It's
subjective and anecdotal, but on the show, Gary said that he does not believe there are. He says, I think the number was 8-1 that young liberals or young progressive minds outnumber young conservative minds, and that there's no future whatsoever for conservatism and the ideals of what's being, you know, thrown aside, essentially.
I'm giving up on both sides, and we should believe in America.
Like, my response to him on air though is, if you're perpetually online, that's kind of the sense you'll get, because you have the vocal minority who's the loudest online most of the time. Like the Reddit crowd is the first thing I think of, is hyper progressive crowd that spends too much time perpetually online, have nothing else to care about in life, so they have to create causes for themselves, and that's why they're so loud and why you get the sense that so many young people lean progressive. But they're like, I've really seen the truth of
I'm not laughing at you. Yeah.
No, I know. It's a good point. I mean, I think that is probably true for a lot, because, but I would say young conservatives under the age of 30 don't get laid, but once you hit 30 years old, and that's where I was going with this. I think 30 is a threshold, is when you start trying to start a family, pay taxes, get a house, and you recognize where your taxes aren't going, even though where they should be going, you start to have a more conservative sensibilities. And I think people start to lean that way, and it's natural.
You realize you rely to your whole life, and that the government is evil and not your friend, and the American dream is unattainable. So
chemtrails. Yeah. What are your thoughts? Tennessee banning chemtrails, banning cloud seeding. But then you have Dubai, who had that huge flood within the past week. Essentially, it looked like a sea, their airport, yep. And they're openly admitted to cloud seeding in effort to, you know, create some damp environments and such. Anthony, thoughts on the weather? I gotta put on my conspiracy hat even further. You know, the weekends have been kind of crappy in the weekdays. Are they trying to, you know, make us miserable by giving us clouds? Is the Biden administration sending bad weather our way? You know,
I know, it's pretty nice this weekend.
In early November, is it going to be, you know, beautiful weather just so the Democrats pour out to the polls, because, you know, Republicans always want rain on, you know, election day?
It's sunny and 80 on November 12th. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's a record high for election day.
Oh, my goodness.
Tony, interesting science has become a religion for many, which explains all the pitfalls and missteps experienced by other religions.
It's true. No, it absolutely has. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't think both of these parties have subscribed to just taking money from these companies for their own benefit. So, and that's my point. You can't just do stuff without the government.
Dude, it's already been an hour. We didn't even get into TikTok.
I know. Well, let me just rant about the Sixers really quick, and we could wrap up. First of all, quick side note, binged the entire Fallout series in one day, and it is amazing. Just please watch all of it. And
first episode, if you watched, really good. The lead girl,
they're all that good.
The lead girl is very appealing to continue with the series. I'm married. I'm allowed to say something like that now, right?
I mean, either way, you're allowed. She kills it. And the guy in the black hat from Westworld plays the ghoul in this series. And oh my goodness, man, it is everything and more you'd want from one season, and they're already approved for a second. It gives you all the character ties, all the emotions.
Has Ed Harris really the power been narrowed dynamic. Down to the man in the black hat from Westworld?
I love that that role he has. But no, you're right. He has so many roles. So
yeah, Ed Harris is everywhere, man. Is that who that is? I haven't gotten to that point yet.
Is that him?
Ed Harris is like the old version of the man in the black hat. Are you talking about when he's a younger guy?
Yes.
Sense, because I don't know that guy's name either. I thought you were talking about
Yeah, and to be fair, that's Ella Purnell, who is the lead actor that you're referring to.
Oh, that's a girl.
Yeah.
All right, so complete clarity. I got like 80% through the first episode, then I fell asleep. But I was enthralled through the first 80% of the first episode.
Yeah, I wasn't in love with the game, but I was absolutely floored with how much it pulled me in immediately. Like, I needed to keep watching it on Sunday. Like, I was just lazy.
Like the game. It's nothing like the game, apparently.
I think it's based off the fourth.
Is it?
If I'm not wrong.
I didn't
play the fourth, though.
Fans are angry because the canon of the TV show makes no sense when it comes to the game, and there's not a lot of crossover.
That's dumb. It's a good story. It's dumb. Who cares? I don't care.
And that's the thing. It's like I was reading like an Esquire report or something on it, that or Hollywood Reporter, and they're saying essentially there's no good story in the game in the first place. So if you make a story based on the Fallout story, it's going to suck.
I think they killed it. We'll talk about all of it when Dan finishes it up. I can't spoil it for him right now, but it is. Please, just if you have the time, it's only 8 episodes. They're all around 40 minutes to an hour. There's, I think, 2 are an hour and the rest around 40 minutes. So pretty easy watch. And the power dynamics, dude. The way I talked about Dune and the power dynamics in it.
Yeah.
Same thing. And the power. And
I love the world creating. Did you ever watch, what the hell, Silo on Apple TV?
Yes. Yeah, that was absolutely awesome. Yeah, yeah. Similar idea, yeah.
And it's almost like a reflective of society as we see it, as, you know, where is there a shadowy government involved and trying to figure out the story behind it, and whether TikTok's involved. which it is.
it's ByteDance. Yeah, that's the villain in the show. But moving on, the Sixers, of course, have to.
Right, before you go there, I just want to say, for my entertainment suggestions, I got to say Michael Pelka has completely ruined me by getting me addicted to Gordon Ramsay. So after Hell's Kitchen, we started Next Level Chef or Top Level Chef, whatever the hell it is. Yep. He's just obsessed with it. Then because of that, we watched like Food Stars or something like that. So that's taken up time. And now last night, because he asked me to, or he told me about some fat kid in MasterChef Junior, I started watching MasterChef Junior, and I cannot get enough of it. Maisie can't get enough of it. It's really impeded on my actual. So when she goes to sleep, that's when I get to watch stuff with like Fallout. So I'm just laying there on the couch in the dark watching this great show. And that's why I just slowly drift away.
And it's a little intense for her before bed. But definitely, I don't know. Mary isn't that's not her favorite stuff either, but I think she enjoyed the story a bit.
Yeah, she wants to watch the new Eras tour with Maisie.
Yeah, yeah, they could watch that. We'll watch Fall.
Maisie, on every walk since the Taylor Swift's new album's come out, she's like, huh, can I have the login? I want to listen to Taylor. It's like, come on.
I've heard it too many times already.
Have you? Dude. It's terrible.
It's
No, it's not bad. It's okay. It's
there like, are a couple songs that are like fine. Synthwave. The We're So High School song she wrote about Travis Kelce is just the most cliche BS. It's terrible. But her song, I'll give her this. The song with Post Malone, solid. It's pretty good.
Cheese curd is what I'm talking about, Sid. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about. When I say. Cheese curd is hilarious, man. He's an awesome, awesome. Are you watching MasterChef Junior?
I didn't watch it yet. I need to get into it. Okay. I've seen some clips. I don't know if it was from that. But I saw a clip of a kid from Philly flirting with his daughter and Gordon straightened him out. But I love watching Hell's Kitchen with Mary, but I haven't watched much of the Next Level stuff. I should get into it.
All right. So Sixers, man, what's going on there? Filing a grievance against the league, which I think is the right move, but you might have a different thought on that.
No, it was the right move. And the refs in both games, they might as well have just left. And our buddy over at WIP tweeted this. We might as well have just taken 10 foul shots in the beginning of the game and then been told we're not getting another call. And that's essentially how it went in both the games. They're now again calling the, yeah, that was Spike. Yeah. Did I not say that?
No, his hit. I legit usually watch Reddit, like the Sixers live thread feeds. I've been just tuned into Spike's Twitter because it's been entertaining as all.
Oh yeah. Playoffs. He's in his glory, dude. Coming back here.
Whatever. Just a little plug there for guy that's returned to Philadelphia and tweeting nonstop about these Sixers playoffs. It's great.
Yeah, he'll be he's still doing Ricky as well, and you can catch him on the afternoon show, so check him out. But either way, I think that's very much valid. We have gotten back to a point where it seems like the refs are really not calling it on both sides at the end of the game. I don't want to just complain about the refs because I understand Maxey and Embiid both did enough. They both absolutely played out of their minds, but nobody helped them. A guy like Buddy Hield did nothing. Not saying he needs to be the superstar, but that guy, he's afraid to shoot with Josh Hart on him. Like, come on, man. Like,
why is it that everyone that comes to Philadelphia, like the guy took how long until he got his first playoff points and it was a freaking layup off of easy rebound, essentially?
This is why we should have just kept Pat Beverly, especially because they had the chemistry with Embiid and Maxey. Yes, I'm not saying he's perfect. I know he's flawed.
But there was a play that it was beautiful to see. It was so Philadelphia in the Bucks game where he like dives headfirst as the ball is going out of bounds. And it's just
a dog. We should have not got rid of him. I understand we need a pop and shoot guy like Buddy Hield, but look it, we tried to do that and it's already not working. There's still faith. Ricky Council, I think, needs to get more involved. I know he's like lower on the bench, but I just think in general they need some energy. Tobias needs to wake up. I get it. He had 10 points or whatever, but they need to support Embiid and Maxey. If they're scoring over 50 combined, that is let alone enough to beat the Knicks if the bench gives them any help, let alone one of their other starters. So it's unacceptable in my opinion. Play better. I get it. Maxey was fouled twice according to the league, and the timeout could have been called at one or other of the times. Again, sucks. But either way, I'm not going to sit here and act like a sore loser. The team needs to play better, and that's just the bottom line.
I'm happy to act like a sore loser, but these refs suck, and I think they have some gambling money on it.
Apparently one of them went to Nova. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and about that, Nova putting out a tweet in support of their Knicks players? Like, what the hell's going on here?
Not a Philly school. I put out a poll this morning on Kalen Company. It is Nova Philly school. A lot of our listeners said yes, unshockingly. A lot of you probably went to Villanova. It's not a Philly school. Not a Philly school whatsoever. They're turning their backs on us. I will lose my mind if Jay Wright rings the bell tomorrow night. I will lose my mind. Don't you dare.
Are they?
Dude, if they do that, I will be livid. I will be livid.
Wow.
They can't. Bring out Saquon or something.
For someone that I loved the grit of so much and now absolutely despise him, Dante DiVincenzo. Oh, my
God. Oh, my God. I hate him.
Punch him in the face.
I hate him. I hate him so much, dude. I hate get out of here.
I loved him on Villanova, but I hate him now.
I just hate Villanova now, though, too, because I'm a UConn guy. So, yeah, back-to-back champions, just saying.
But. All right, let's end on some politics. Just wrap it up here. Did you see this? This came out after you were off the air today.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. So the pause is written on the teleprompter, Anthony. And he reads it on the teleprompter to get...
What we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Oh, I'm just going to smile now.
I love it. I love
Dude,
this guy, man.
I'm
really
Ron Burgundy.
So sad when he's out of office.
It's so insane. It's so insane. And
letting it slip on topic, we're talking about the globalist cabal that Biden's ingratiated with. Take a listen.
In a sense, I don't know why we're surprised by Trump. How many times does he have to prove we can't be trusted?
He says we can't be trusted.
Oh, my God, dude.
Yeah.
Put Grandpa in the home, dude. Put Grandpa in the home. I've told my dad I'm putting him in a home.
So let's say,
why can't we put Grandpa in a home?
We're communications professionals. Let's say our name's out there for a director of communications gig, and the Biden campaign comes knocking and says, you know, we've embarrassed our last three press people. He won't follow any of the scripts and sometimes goes off of it and loses himself and actually reads the script, but he reads the wrong part of the script. We want to hire you, Anthony. Your response?
How much?
That's a good point. Yeah, probably with you there. Yeah.
I mean, first of all, how much? And second of all, if I could help, direct the Democrats a little bit, I would take advantage of that. Absolutely.
True. Like underlying. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
All right, Anthony, what you got coming up tomorrow? Anything big on Kale or Don?
Tomorrow, Kale and Company, we will have Sean Farish on in the morning, I believe at 9 a.m. So he will join us after the cut sheet segments and our news at 8. So keep an eye there. I know a lot of people are joking when Zioli had Trump on. Is this really Trump or is this Sean Farish? You know,
it was actually Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. So we always love having Sean. I know a lot of his fans always pop in on days like tomorrow. So tune in the morning starting 6 till 10. And then from 10 to 12, it will be myself and Dawn taking you on the Dawn Stensland Show.
I love it. And then I'm Dom Giordano tomorrow, Anthony. This is an interesting guest. It's something that actually came to us. It's a charter school, Memphis Street Academy in Kensington. Mm-hmm. The president, the superintendent of the school, they're on their way to shutting down because it's almost impossible to operate a middle school in the conditions of Kensington with open air drugs happening, you know, right outside. He's going to be joining Dom tomorrow at 12:30 to see what we can do, you know, to turn stuff around for a charter school here in Philadelphia that just can't operate because of Kensington. It's miserable. It's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's something I go through Kensington weekly now, and it's, I mean, dude, the families there don't deserve it and we have to do something. So.
And then 1 o'clock, we'll have Caroline Leavitt. She's the national press voice for the Trump campaign coming on to talk about rally coming up, Trump Wildwood rally, May 11th, which I think we'll both be down in Wildwood for. I don't know. We'll talk
yes.
about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're planning some stuff right now around that. So May 11th, and she'll be also stepping out of the courtroom. She's sitting there with Trump live in New York with all this. So, Anthony, that's all I got. Have a good afternoon. Wait, what the hell is Dan on the second shift? Who knew the AM crew is here? I didn't. I'm not in the AM. That's Anthony.
That's me. Get it right, Tony. Come on.
Come on, Tone. Elect more Democrats. Thank you for sure we'll fix Kensington, Dan Wyvern says.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
All right, Anthony, thank you. Thanks, everybody. Have a good week. We'll see you next week.
Go Bye-bye. Sixers.
Go Sixers.